Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows that good guys lost.
Welcome Everybody to the first edition of the Lifeboat Hour 2015. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I sincerely hope your holidays were peaceful and that you're feeling inspired and vibrant as we enter the new year. My intention is to add to that inspiration tonight because I want to share some ideas about how we can move into what is certain to be a very challenging year using tools that not only inspire us, but also help us take care of ourselves and serve the Earth community. Before we move into discussing those tools, I want to let you know that next week, my guest is Dmitry Orlov, who many of you know and love from his being on the Lifeboat Hour in the past and from his incredible books and articles. As most of you know, Dmitry lived through the collapse of the Soviet Union, and he's an expert not only on collapse, but on what's happening in Russia right now and U.S.-Russia relations, which, as you know, are quite dicey at the moment. And I know that he'll have much to say about both topics, so please join Dmitry and me next Sunday night. Basically, I have three suggestions that I'd like to offer and on which I will elaborate extensively in this show. They sound simple, but they aren't. The first suggestion is that we make a commitment to live this year more in the heart than in the mind. The second is falling back in love with the earth. And the third is creating beauty at every opportunity. Now, these are not New Year's resolutions because we all know that New Year's resolutions are only made to be broken. These are intentions that we set, not just for 2015, but for the rest of our lives. They are practices. And when we practice anything, it's not about perfection, but continuing to practice. So the first intention, living more in the heart than the head. I'm not going to yammer on about how industrial civilization socializes us to live in our heads, because all of my writings address this in some way, nor am I going to shame anyone for doing so. Beyond our socialization, there are other reasons people choose to live in their heads, and it's always, without exception, about fear. We're terrified of our feelings because we don't know how to manage them, and we have little support for doing so. We're afraid of getting overwhelmed by them, so we stuff them and live in what I call the cerebosphere, as in the realm of the rational mind. The problem with that is that we can't think our way into transformation of consciousness. And for me, the transformation of consciousness is the only game in town. If all you want to do is survive, you're probably listening to the wrong show. The Lifeboat Hour was named and created by Mike Rupert because his intention was to create pockets of sanity and consciousness as people navigate the realities of collapse and near-term extinction. He was also well aware that many of us won't survive, and we are all aware that he chose not to survive. What we are living through, and I believe it's what we came here to live through, must be our teacher. And our job is to become students of collapse and extinction. Charles Eisenstein wrote in his wonderful book, The Ascent of Humanity, "If we want to outlast the multiple crises unfolding today, let us not seek to survive them. That is the mindset of separation. That is resistance, a clinging to a dying past. Instead, let us shift our perspective toward reunion and think in terms of what we can give. What can we each contribute to a more beautiful world? That is our only responsibility and our only security." I'm going to read that again because it is so spot on. Eisenstein says, "If we want to outlast the multiple crises unfolding today, let us not seek to survive them. That is the mindset of separation. That is resistance, a clinging to a dying past. Instead, let us shift our perspective toward reunion and think in terms of what we can give. What can we each contribute to a more beautiful world? That is our only responsibility and our only security." One of the first lessons these crises want to teach us is how to live in our hearts. But what does that really mean? The mystical Indian poet Kabir said, "The arrogance of reason has separated us from love. With the word reason, you already feel miles away." The heart is what I call something greater within us, or the deeper self. It is a piece of eternity that we carry, that loves to love and be loved. It's the part of us that is beyond the ego, the part that knows how precious and valuable and lovable we are at heart, in the core of our being. For me, a poem that communicates this so gently and yet so powerfully is called Guardian Angel by the Norwegian poet Rolf Jacobsen. Here it is. "I am the bird that flutters against your window in the morning, and your closest friend, whom you can never know, blossoms that light up for the blind. I am the glacier shining over the woods, so pale, and heavy voices from the cathedral tower. The thought that suddenly hits you in the middle of the day and makes you feel so fantastically happy. I am the one you have loved for many years. I walk beside you all day and look intently at you and put my mouth against your heart, though you're not aware of it. I am your third arm, your second shadow, the white one, whom you cannot accept and who can never forget you." This is the Lifeboat Hour, and I'm your host, Carolyn Baker. We're talking about three intentions, not resolutions, but intentions that I believe are essential for us to work toward this year and beyond. We've just been talking about the first, living more in the heart than in the head. The second intention is falling back in love with the earth. In The Ascent of Humanity, Charles Eisenstein talks about the age of reunion, or this time in which we're living where we're beginning to discover that what really makes us human is not our separation from each other and from the earth community, but our oneness. And he says, "The age of reunion is nothing more or less than falling back in love with the world. Nothing, not even an electron, is generic. All are individuals, special, and therefore sacred." So falling back in love with the world is the practice of reminding ourselves of this often and living as if everyone and everything is connected and as if everyone and everything is sacred. I find it more difficult to practice this with people, but I have little difficulty practicing it with the earth. Nothing is more important in this time of collapse and extinction than falling back in love with the earth. You know, it's interesting. In my work, I connect with so many people who really want to stand up for the ecosystems and resist the destruction of the ecosystems, but they don't have much actual face time with the earth. You know, I've discovered that it's one thing to sit at my computer and be in my head about the earth, but a very different experience to get away from my computer and go immerse myself in the earth. And I've also discovered that immersing myself in the earth dramatically enhances my ability to open my heart. Many of our Lifeboat listeners have read or are reading the book that Guy McPherson and I published in 2014, Extinction Dialogues, How to Live with Death in Mind. What we offer in this book is a weaving together of science and spirituality. One of our role models for doing so is a man who's a hero to both of us, Carl Sagan. Carl was an American astronomer, cosmologist, astrophysicist, astrobiologist, author, science popularizer, and science communicator in astronomy and other natural sciences, and he was passionately in love with life. Not only was he a brilliant scientist, but he had a beautiful speaking voice. Perhaps you've heard his reading, The Pale Blue Dot. I'd like to play that for us now because it gives us such a lovely taste of falling back in love with the earth. This is a clip from Carl Sagan's Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey series from the 1980s. The Pale Blue Dot, of course, is the earth. And as he speaks the words in the video, one sees the pale blue dot of earth in the distance, dwarfed by the vastness of space. Let's listen.
That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. The earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. How fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
And here we are on this pale blue dot on the Lifeboat Hour, just having crossed the threshold into 2015. One of the ways I suggest people fall in love with the Earth or fall back in love with the Earth is simply by being out in nature and talking to the various beings there. And not only talking, but listening. Sit still and have a conversation with a tree or an animal. Ask it a question and see what happens. Share what is on your heart and listen. And notice what happens to you as you do that. At first, you may feel silly because everything in our culture of the intellect tells us that this is absurd. But I challenge you to do it. And feel what happens, especially what happens in your body. I'd like to share this poem from Mary Oliver entitled Messenger, which comes from her book of poems called Thirst. My work is loving the world. Here the sunflowers, there the hummingbird. Equal seekers of sweetness. Here the quickening yeast, there the blue plums, here the clam deep in the speckled sand. Are my boots old? Is my coat torn? Am I no longer young and still not half perfect? Let me keep my mind on what matters, which is my work. Which is mostly standing still and learning to be astonished. The Phoebe, the delphinium, the sheep in the pasture and the pasture, which is mostly rejoicing since all the ingredients are here, which is gratitude to be given a mind and a heart and these body clothes, a mouth with which to give shouts of joy to the moth. And the wren, to the sleepy dug-up clam, telling them all, over and over, how it is that we live forever. Our work is loving the world for the world's sake and for our own. And you know, you can fall back in love with the earth as many times as you like or as you need to. Another music selection now, this one from Grammy Award winner and member of the Wolf Clan of the Oneida Nation, Joanne Shenandoah, and it's simply called Mother Earth.
Yeah. my soul. Bridge carried through the smoke, a quest to make me whole. Sweet sound.
That was Joanne Shenandoah, member of the Wolf Clan of the Oneida Nation and a woman with a gorgeous voice, singing Mother Earth. So, two intentions to set for 2015 and for the rest of our lives are living more in the heart than in the head and falling back in love with the earth. The third intention I want to focus on now is creating beauty as often as possible, wherever possible. Creating beauty is not about being an award-winning artist or musician or actor or poet. Rather, it's about, first of all, noticing beauty and making beauty a kind of spiritual practice for ourselves. Some of you may be familiar with one of my most beloved authors, who was a poet and a very funny man while he was still with us, John O'Donohue. John was a priest in Ireland for many years and left the priesthood in 2000. His first and perhaps most famous book was Anam Cara, which in Gaelic means soul friend. He studied philosophy at the University of Tübingen in Germany, and his focus was on the philosophy of Hegel, whom he avidly admired because Hegel was one of the first Western philosophers to challenge dualistic thinking. You'll recall that Hegel was highly popularized by Marx, who admired Hegel's famous thesis, antithesis, synthesis scheme called the dialectic. John O'Donohue was not a political animal, although he was a passionate environmental activist. But he was a champion of non-dual thinking and living. His second book was Eternal Echoes, Celtic Reflections on Our Yearning to Belong. But my favorite of all of John's books is called Beauty, The Invisible Embrace. and I want to share some portions of it with you because they are so necessary in any discussion of beauty. Tragically, 2 days after his 52nd birthday, 7 years ago today, January 4th, 2008, John passed away in his sleep. He left us so much prose and so much poetry, so much inspiration, yes, so much beauty. And here are a couple of selections from Beauty, the Invisible Embrace. This first selection, I think, is extremely important because in this culture, we tend to believe that beauty is pristine and has to portray perfection. It has to be flawless. But John says, quote, "Beauty is not an extra luxury, an accidental experience that we happen to have if we're lucky. Beauty dwells at the heart of life. To recognize and celebrate beauty is to recognize the ultimate sacredness of experience. To glimpse the subtle embrace of belonging where we are wed to the divine, the beauty of every moment, of everything." Unquote. So every moment, even the ugliest moments, have some beauty in them. And even if we can't find it, we can create it. And that is when our creating beauty is so necessary. Here's another selection from Beauty, the Invisible Embrace. Quote, "The heart is the place where beauty arrives. Here is where it can be felt, recognized, and shared. If there was no heart, beauty could never reach us. Through the heart, beauty can pervade every cell of the body and fill us." Unquote. The many faceted global crises that we face are robbing us of beauty and creating what I call the uglification of everything. Whether it be the rotting gray carcasses of bleak, boarded up city blocks of abandoned storefronts, suburban cul-de-sacs consisting of vacant foreclosed homes, countless crumbling bridges and pothole-pocked roads, tasteless, thoughtlessly constructed high-rises, irredeemably scarred mountaintops, or charred forest ravaged by the worst fire season in recent memory, the landscape of our planet is becoming increasingly dull, drab, and downright dismal. But not only our landscape lacks luster in this time of daunting and depressing changes, so does the soul of our nation and our communities. Economic downturn, an epidemic of senseless violence, resource depletion, extreme weather, media marinated in consumeristic blather, and a pervasive sense of loss that signals an inexorable departure of meaning, creativity, inspiration, and compassion from the modern world. All of this leaves us so hungry for beauty that we do not even recognize our longing. And then from time to time, we hear a note, or we see a color, or read a poem that stirs the ache in the soul for beauty. Perhaps we immediately quash the impulse because we feel too busy, too tired, too burdened, too despairing, or too fearful that if we surrender to it, we'll be forced to confront the vapid grayness of the lack of beauty in our lives. Or perhaps we follow what is stirred by a glimpse of beauty inside of us, and we follow and we allow ourselves to indulge, even revel in the body sensations and soul restoration that bathe us for a time in beauty. We know that when tragedy occurs and lives are lost, survivors bring objects of beauty to a wounded place and create beautiful altars and shrines. In Newtown, Connecticut, where the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre occurred in December 2012, the town witnessed a historical outpouring of sacred objects brought to the scene of the tragedy by mourners from far and wide. Newtown has now declared that it will collect all of those mementos and turn them into sacred soil for a permanent memorial. Wounded places cry out for beauty, and activist and author Trebby Johnson, who has a website called Radical Joy for Hard Times, writes of making beauty for wounded places. And one way of doing this is what she describes as an earth exchange. An earth exchange is a part ceremony, part social event, part happening, part nature walk. An earth exchange might consist of one person or 100. It can be planned for weeks in advance or occur on the spur of the moment. And it can last a week or a few minutes. All it takes is going to a damaged place, opening up to what's there now, and making some beauty of and for this place that has given so much to the people who live among it or love to visit it. As we prepare for an increasingly challenging future, let's commit to creating beauty wherever and whenever possible. Whatever next culture is created on the ashes of the current one by those who survive its unraveling will not evolve only from the efforts of those who are clear-eyed and clear-headed thinkers, but also from the creativity of artists and any others who seize every opportunity to create beauty. Right now, in many hollowed-out, decimated urban areas like Detroit, Cleveland, and other areas, we're witnessing an explosion of urban farming and a proliferation of art in all forms. We might think that urban farming is just agriculture that has a practical value, which is to feed people, and that's extremely important. And we might think that it isn't really an art, but it is really an art. It brings beauty to places that have been troubled and that had been seizing with loss. I'd like to end our show tonight with this beautiful traditional Irish blessing from our friend John O'Donohue in his own voice with this beautiful Irish accent of his, a blessing for all that we must navigate in the coming year. I'll make just a couple of comments after the blessing, but let's listen to John O'Donohue give us his blessing for this year.
In deference to the old Celtic rhythm, I'd like to start with a poem of blessing, because the Celts had a great sense of the latent sacredness of experience. And I suppose they also had a profound natural sense of appropriateness. In other words, that you don't brashly stumble into an experience, but that an experience of significance warrants its own contour and warrants a reverence of approach. And it's very interesting that lyrically and implicitly that these so-called primitive people intuitively had a natural hermeneutics of presence. And it was done through blessing. And I'd like to read this poem for all of us and for absent friends as well. There's a Gaelic word in the poem called Corach. And a corrock is a canvas boat that people fish from in the west of Ireland. So Bannocht. On the day when the weight deadens on your shoulders and you stumble, may the clay dance to balance you. And when your eyes freeze behind the grey window and the ghost of loss gets into you, may a flock of colours, indigo, red, green, and azure blue, come to awaken in you a meadow of delight. When the canvas frays in the corrock of thought and a stain of ocean blackens beneath you, may there come across the waters a path of yellow moonlight to bring you safely home. May the nourishment of the earth be yours. May the clarity of light be yours. May the fluency of the ocean be yours. May the protection of the ancestors be yours. And so may a slow wind work these words of love around you, an invisible cloak to mind your life.
That was John O'Donohue giving us his beautiful Irish blessing, which we can take with us in 2015. And I thank you so much for joining us tonight. I thank you for your support of the Lifeboat Hour. I am very grateful that I have the opportunity now to host this show. And I'm very grateful to all of the guests that we had on the show in 2014. I'm planning to have some amazing guests in the coming months. And as I said, we'll be back next week with Dmitry Orlov. Meanwhile, please commit to living more in the heart than the head. Commit to falling back in love with the earth and create beauty wherever you can, whenever you can. I wish you a rich and meaningful 2015. Good night.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows.